Welcome to Jesus-Centric Leadership. I'm Donna. I'm here with Pastor Josh, and we have a special guest with us in the chair at the table, Emma Turnbull-Onstott.
You struggle with that.
It's not that hard.
We
were just walking through the building, and I introduced her as Emma Turnbull. It takes me a little bit, and you've been married 5 years, so I should get it by now. Emma, tell us a little bit about you've grown up at peace forever.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Well, first, thank you guys for having me. I love that you're having these conversations. Yes, Donna, I've known Donna since I was born, so long before I even had memories.
Thanks. Thanks for that.
That was great.
I was like, how long have I known you? Well, how old am I? me and my four sisters and parents grew up in this church. I mean, my sister was married here. Were my parents married here? I think they were.
I don't know that.
Maybe not. I should know that.
I've been here that long.
I growing up at Peace was the best experience, and I attribute a lot of that to you, Donna, just the youth ministry. I could do a whole podcast on just the pivotal role you had in my formation, my faith formation, and my formation as a human being, as a woman. And so that's why we've kept in touch, even though, you know, we don't attend in the same way we used to, but you're like a forever mentor for me. So I can't thank you enough.
I've learned a lot from you in the many discussions and talks that we've had on the way to El Paso on mission trips and just your heart. And it's great to have you here, but it's kind of a challenging topic that we're talking about today. And it's the deconstructing of faith. And that's a hard one, but it's a really valuable one. Why do you think this conversation is so valuable?
I mean, on a really simple level, it's because it's real, you know? Anything that's real is often messy, challenging, but anything worth doing is that, right? And so, for the simple fact that I know so many peers as well who've kind of gone through this, and it's an identity thing to go through that type of deconstruction when you were born into a family that had a very strong faith foundation. And so it's world shattering in some ways, mm-hmm. and scary for some people to talk about, especially people who want to keep it safe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. Well said. Pastor, why do you think this is an important topic for our leaders to hear about?
Yeah, I mean, I would just echo what Emma said. I think she said it really well. Like, if it's real and it's happening, then we have to understand. Like, I mean, my story is not one that I, you know, there's questions, there's always that, but I never deconstructed. But there was some people that did. Now, again, my life with Jesus looks a little different than my parents' is in some way, but like I never did that. But like, so I need to understand better kind of what you went through and where you're at, because we're going to have our students and people we know that go through this, and how do we journey better with them? And that's what I'm looking forward to understanding better.
Yeah. So deconstruction is a word that has kind of become a buzzword in a sense. But basically, I think in the world or in the media or whatever, it meant blowing up my faith. You talked about it more in three parts. You talked about, you're going to talk about the construction, the deconstruction, and then the reconstruction. Why do you think it's become such a thing just to blow up faith and leave it there?
You know, I think churches are made up of human beings, and humans are very imperfect, and we hurt each other. And anytime you start to mix a bunch of humans and money and faith, it's going to get messy. And so I think a lot of people have genuinely been hurt by the church. Interestingly, in my youth, I wasn't hurt by peace. I can say that with my head, I'm very proud of that. I don't have church hurt in the sense of what you hear people who blow up their faith. But I think, I guess I can only speak to my own experience, but I think that there was not a lot of room for gray, and it felt certainty obsessed a little bit. And sometimes growth happens in the gray, and I felt like I had to get a little more comfortable with gray in order to grow and to anchor back into it, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But yeah, a lot of people, they blow it up, and I don't think it's ever the end of the story, though. Like, if it seems like it's blown up for life and they swear they'll never return, we'd never know. Like, we don't know, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, you don't know what somebody, you don't know what God's going to do. Yeah. And where he's going to show up. And he is faithful. Yeah. So let's talk about the construction. Share with us a little bit of your faith up to the point where you kind of began the deconstruction.
Yeah, I would describe my faith growing up as really comfortable and safe. And the paradox of at the same time, it was kind of like fear-based for me. Like, I remember being afraid of, like, do you remember that movie Left Behind? Like,
yeah.
I remember being afraid of, like, waking up and my family being gone, and or, like, being afraid of getting punished by God for listening to certain music. So there was some of the, like, it felt a little bit, in hindsight, I was like, oh, that's transactional. That's not the character of God. But at the time, that's what I had, and that's what I knew. And so that's when it kind of started, I don't know, probably high school, late, early 20s. But like I said, it wasn't ever bad. There was nothing that happened. In fact, it was so good that I think it took a while for me to get to that point of starting to ask some of these questions. And Donna, you always let me ask those questions and welcomed them. And so that, I appreciate that. But it felt like the, it felt to me at the time like the Christian peers around me didn't want those questions. And so then it was like, well, I guess I'll go elsewhere. Or, well, then this is no longer the space for my wrestling. And I might be getting a little bit ahead, but...
No, you're good.
Yeah. Yeah, it felt like I almost... I could see the way, for in a word, it was like the treatment of the other for me that really turned it. I was working at a ministry-based organization, and there was a discrepancy between what they said and what they did when it came to treatment of the other, however you want to describe who that could be. And it was like, all are welcome, and there's a space for everyone here, but then the actions were very different than that. And so there was some injury there with some of that hypocrisy that I perceived. And so that was kind of like the big turning point for me, was it felt like it didn't align with the character of God to act in that way.
I'm just sitting here thinking, I'm thinking about you growing up, and I'm remembering a backpack trip that we were on that went south, and not our fault, but the people who were guiding us. And we had to send some people out. It's a very long story. It's great. It could be its own podcast. But I remember you looking over my shoulder and making sure I was being consistent with what I said. It's funny, because I think that's something you've always looked for. You've always looked for the consistency of what people say and what they're doing. And so in your deconstruction phase, I hate to call it a phase, but we talk about in those three parts, in your middle part, you're looking for that. And it's almost like, see, there it is, right there.
Yeah, I love that. You noticed that. The consistency is important, and I would even upgrade that word to integrity. This has been a huge part of every facet of my life, and certainly my faith. Integrity, not in the sense of doing the right thing or anything like that, but a basic definition of it being doing what you say you're going to do and being who you say you're going to be. And integrity comes from the root word integer, which is whole number. And so there's a wholeness that comes with integrity. And I think I was just coming to grips with the somewhat broken systems of faith that I was in at that time. And my own faith, to be honest, it wasn't just me pointing fingers. It was very much like, oh, well, why? Well, that doesn't add up. And looking at the character of God, it was never me walking away from God. I will say that. It was from every system that surrounded what I knew about God. And so I felt like God still feel like God is a deeply integrity-centered person. You know, Christ. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so we were blessed to have conversations while you were with that organization. And I remember you were moving along pretty rapidly up the ladder. At what point did you top out of, I gotta step away from this, and I am stepping away from my faith?
Yeah, man, that was so hard because I still have relationships, and I there's so much love that I have for everyone there. So it's also another tension I hold to be like, this is the best job I've ever had, and I have to walk away. It was very, very challenging season, and it really just begun.
And you were being looked at like to be almost the next.
I mean, I felt like that was a possibility.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't, you know, wasn't anything explicit, but it was like, oh, this could, if you wanted to go all in, you know, you never know what the future could hold to lead this thing. I've always been, I've always considered myself a leader, and the leaders there saw that, and I felt affirmed in that, which was great. And so it's, as much as there was hurt with me feeling like I had to walk away, there was so much I gained. Oh my gosh, I could never speak ill, honestly. And so, yeah, I think the discomfort of staying outweighed the discomfort of leaving, which is saying something, because it was hard to leave. It was very uncomfortable. And I searched for my next gig for almost a year after that. It was kind of like, felt like a lost, wandering person in many ways, career, identity, community, faith community. But man, I almost, again, hindsight's 20/20, but I feel really thankful for that. And like, you can't really recognize when you're found until you know what it feels like to feel a little lost. And so that's also the gift of deconstruction, right?
Yeah.
For me.
Yeah. Yeah. Well said. What did that, we could go on work-wise, but what was happening to you faith-wise? I was at your wedding, which was beautiful, by the way. It was very faith-filled. It was towards, as you were nearing the end, I think, of your time. So you're having this very faith-filled wedding, this moment, and then you go into a season of lost, and not lost, but searching, and you're deconstructing what you've poured into and what God's poured into your whole life. Mm-hmm. So talk a little bit about that.
I think what I needed to just shed off of me was all of the systems and the structures. And so when I think about this pendulum swing of me being raised in this really tidy, safe box of faith, which was a gift in so many ways, and then as this pendulum begins to swing to the other side, it swung far enough to where I was like, I don't want the systems, I don't want the structures, I don't want the... I don't want the rituals. Like, I didn't want to feel tethered, because I was like, these things I felt at the time don't have the integrity, back to that, to hold. Yeah. And so I was like, I'll just be untethered. And even in terms of the really faith-filled wedding, I think even in the middle of deconstruction, I think it would still be pretty faith-filled wedding, honestly, because it was mine and Jake's. It didn't feel like a system. It was like, this is our choice, and we're doing this. There was no one imposing it. You know, there wasn't a pastor who married us. It was a close mentor friend. Could have been you, Donna. You could just as high up there.
People. She had great words.
She was great.
She was amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Love her. Shout out to Janella. Yeah. So, yeah, I think the pendulum swung over to just shedding all of that. And not to skip ahead, but like, now I'm like back to this place of in the center, almost, of like, oh, here's the benefit of structures and rituals, and beautiful rituals like communion, and the symbolism of that is so potent and poetic and artistic and beautiful. And I'm holding those rituals so much differently, but I had to shed them before I could see the gift of what they were. But because they weren't a gift, they were just like, this is more people telling me what to do and this is going to make you closer to God if you just do this. It felt disembodied for me. It felt like hands, but no heart.
So we talked about, before we started the podcast, kind of a visual, right? It's like your construction is this box that you're given with these blocks in it that fit together perfectly, and it's all put together, and here you are. The deconstruction is kind of a moment where you're dumping that out. And then the reconstruction is what's going to go back in that. And that's really simple. We know faith is so much more, but just to kind of give it a word picture. In the deconstruction, what was your bottom? Like, what was the point that was like, man, I got to get to reconstruction?
That's a really good question. I'm going to answer it. Hopefully this is answering it. Every year, Good Friday is the... I'm going to talk about Easter for a second. Like, Good Friday is the day that it lands deepest in my soul than any other holiday. Like, and I've tried to shake the story of Jesus. And so I would say anytime I tried to shake it would be bottom. Whereas like, nah, yeah, like this probably isn't real, or that certainly can't be, you know, whatever rationale I wanted to put on it or tried. Good Friday never let me do that. Like, it felt so real. It felt more real than any science could tell me. You know, it felt experientially real. Mm-hmm. Not intellectually, but because we all know, no matter what you've been through or how old you are, like, we know what a tomb feels like, you know? We know what that Friday feels like when it feels like death. It feels like despair, loneliness, you know? That's a visceral thing that humans go through no matter what. And the Sunday is coming. The resurrection story is what I could not shake.
The tomb is empty.
The tomb is empty, yeah. And I see it everywhere now. And the invitation is like, can you see it in the challenging parts of scripture that make me scratch my head? Can you? Like, that's a skill. Can you see it in the way the seasons come and go, and the seasons of life, and the seasons of weather, and
as you face death, as you face when your grandma died, as you face
Yes, it's like I'm choosing to, and I want to believe that Sunday is coming, and that I never actually let go of that. I tried, like I said, but, and I think that it's like, what is that? All truth is God's truth. And so what's true somewhere is going to be true everywhere. And I think the resurrection story is true when I'm driving down the road and when I lose a loved one. And when you walk a friend through the worst imaginable thing, or your spouse leaves you, or, you know, whatever horrendous thing life could throw your way, it's true, always, capital T. And that's really the basis of my faith. And from there, I can build from that place, you know.
Was it an event, a moment, or did this just start seeping in?
For the rebuilding?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say seeping in for sure. It was...
like, I'm coming in.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely not. For me, it was never like I'm giving myself to Christ moment. It was like slowly coming in like a wave, and then it was all at once. And even as a kid with the construction initially, there was not a moment that I have in my memory of giving my life, you know.
Way to be a good Lutheran. Good job.
I don't have memories. I was given it when I was born.
Yeah.
I used to get jealous of people who'd be like, I'll never forget. I was 10 years old, and I was like, no, I always
I've always
had it.
Known. Yeah.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think even through the deconstruction, I still knew. And it's just, and I'm thankful for that foundation of faith because I don't think it ever really left me. Mm. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
And what is, and at the same time, Emma, what a beautiful story you have. Like, I remember I went, this is going to make me sound really old and dorky, but I went to a Stephen Curtis Chapman concert when
yes,
I was in
really
college.
Old and dorky,
thank
Stephen
you.
Curtis Chapman.
Thank
yeah.
you. And he opened, okay, now I'm going to really bury myself. He opened for Michael W. Smith. He wasn't a name.
Even dorkier.
I know. Thanks, Pastor. And he comes out in boots and shorts. I was in Texas, freshman in college. I know, this is going downhill really fast. But he came out and he said, I would love to tell you that I've got a big story, that I did drugs and God made me clean, that I did this or that, and he redeemed me. He goes, but I'm just a country boy, a dorky one, but a country boy, who loves the Lord and just wants to sing about him. And it was this statement of, I've always known him. I don't know a time I haven't. Now we know, fast forward, Stephen Curtis Chapman went through his own kind of hard, really hard story. But God carried him through that. But it doesn't always have to be the splash beginning of how God's going to use it, right? Yeah.
Yeah, and I love that, like, in the death and resurrection of Jesus, like, I think the faith rooted in that is where it's supposed to be, right? Like, if we have that foundation, then, you know, praise be to God, because that's what it's supposed to be.
So during this time, and I promise we're going to get to the reconstruction, but during this time, did you feel seen or heard by the church? And when I say by the church, I'm saying by the church, like by Christians, by, yeah, yeah. Like, did you feel seen or heard?
You know, I would say at large, no. And that was kind of my even reason for taking it all apart in the first place. I had a few close relationships where I felt totally comfortable, who they were still very rooted in their faith. So that was huge. And I will also say, like, I wasn't leaning into it. So, like, I don't put that on the church. Mm-hmm. I know you guys are church leaders, so you're like, no, This is what we do. Like, we want to lean in. But for me, it was like, it felt inevitable, where I just needed to step away, which is hard. It's kind of like, if I'm watching myself do that, it's like letting a kid do something that you don't want them to do or something. You know, it's like
getting up from the table and am I going to come back?
Yeah. And there's a question there for a minute, right?
Yeah. Like, your family's having this beautiful dinner and I'm stepping away.
Yes.
And I just don't know if that's going to happen.
Exactly, yeah. And I keep coming back to this word, like, being in a liminal space. Liminal is the space between. It can be metaphorical, physical. It's like this pregnant pause. And I think my deconstruction, I was in a liminal space where it's like you get up from the table and it's like, to be determined. We don't know where this is. And we go through life with so many liminal spaces, we can't see the future. And that's the beauty of faith in God and in resurrection. But yeah, in those liminal spaces, there are a few key people who continue to just operate in their own integrity of, like, that's fine. You can go wander how you need to wander, but I'm here and I believe God's here and he's not going. And there was the speaking that over me. I'm thinking of, like, one person in particular who, for whatever reason, I just leaned on with that and never strayed from that relationship. Mm-hmm. So, but I stopped attending a church during that time, of course, as literal walking away. And so so I'll answer your question by saying, no, I didn't feel seen or heard, but I wasn't trying to feel seen or heard.
So let's move into the reconstruction. What kind of brought you back to the table?
You know, I started to put that same high bar for integrity that I put on the church at large in the mirror. And I was like, oh, like, you're angry and, like, unkind to yourself or on the road. Or I also had a baby, and that'll do it.
That changes a lot.
Yes, and also went through incredible anxious anxiety for, like, probably close to a year. And I've never experienced anything.
You had your baby coming out of COVID, right?
It was 2023, okay. So... couple years after it had settled by then. But, you know, I feel like I walked through life tackling what came my way with excellence or whatever. And just like, oh, good grades and, you know. And then I couldn't do that with motherhood. Like, that's just, it was just too big to wrap my arms around, you know. And so, yeah, it was a mess for a year nearly. And so angry with God. Just like, and felt so abandoned, honestly. I came to a point where I was like, oh, what is this? Like, oh, I'm so far from God. And what I thought was like me being smarter than Christians was really me just being distant from God. And that was showing up in very, clear ways in my life, you know, in my spirit more than anything. I was like very rushed all the time. There wasn't a lot of peace, like, and so if I'm to be frank, like, that's still, you know, I'm in the middle of that right now. Like, you don't arrive there either, I suppose. But yeah, it was very much like a sober look in the mirror of like, did you ever consider it's because you're far from God? Like the Prince of Peace, you know. And honestly, my husband has led me, like, he's a disciplined man. That's why I married him. He's an incredible man of integrity. And he's up every morning under that little light, before the light's even out, reading his Bible and wrestling with it and questioning and inviting God's presence. And so I also will say he's, like, leading us in a really beautiful way.
Praise God. Emma, there's something that's really standing out to me. It's this ability to not place blame. Like, you were so gracious in your words to me at the beginning, and, hey, it wasn't you, it wasn't peace, it wasn't this place I worked at, it wasn't the church. You just keep coming back to this place of it was me. I think that's hard to do when you're going through the hard, whatever your hard is.
And I didn't do that in the thick of it. It was all finger pointing. It was like those people.
Okay, I appreciate that honesty.
It was.
Because I'm like, you're going through this like a saint, like a boss. You're owning it.
Yeah, I'm speaking to it now, I suppose. Like from my place of now, I do feel like I don't point fingers. And that's how I know, like, there's more wisdom here than what was. And I do see my progress, but it was like for a couple years there, it was like bitter. It was very bitter.
Okay.
Yes.
So good.
I didn't speak to that enough.
It's good
clearly.
To know you're human. I'm like, wow, you just own this sucker.
Honestly, like, the way I would describe it, you know, the five stages of grief.
Yeah.
What is the last stage? We'll remember acceptance.
You weave in and out of all of them. So
right,
yeah.
You do.
Yeah.
But number five is acceptance. Mm-hmm. And you do have the anger, which I had. You have the, you know, I had all of them. There was a researcher, I don't know the name, but who says there's actually a sixth phase after acceptance, and that's meaning. And so not only do you hope to just accept this loss, whatever the thing is, but if you really know you've made progress when you can see the meaning of it. And that's what I feel like I'm stepping into, is like, I've accepted it, the change in my faith and the whatever hurt came with it, self-imposed and otherwise. But now it's like, oh, I'm thankful for it. I see the meaning of how it's made me who I am, a more understanding, empathetic, integrity-filled mom, wife, woman, you know? So I'm like, oh, cool. I'm at the meaning, and maybe I'll hop around more. But I feel like I'm at the, oh, I see the meaning of that hard phase for me.
Yeah, I do think in the stages of grief, there's this bouncing around a little bit, right? We know we don't go, oh, I got through stage one, now I'm on to stage two, now I'm on to stage three. But I do also think there's this exiting of it. And I like that, the exiting into the meaning of it, because we don't stay there forever. You know, we move.
Like, I see the resurrection in the five stages of grief. You know, you see it now. You start to see it everywhere. You put on the lens of resurrection, and life starts looking a little lot different.
So I want to move us into, I want to sit here and talk to you all day and
yeah,
make this podcast like 5 hours.
This is what we do.
I know, yeah. It is. And I love it. But for the sake of our listeners, I'm going to kind of start moving us out of it. And I think the question I want to ask is, what is the lesson? I know we started with that, but I also want to come back to it. What would you say to our leaders? And you don't even know who you're talking to, but we do, right? These are the people that are in our leadership circles. We meet with them once a month. We're kind of challenging them to take that next step of leadership. They're working with people. They're working with Emmas. They have Emmas in their family. They have Emmas who are neighbors. What would you say to them? And how would you challenge them? I don't want to just speak into him. I want to challenge him a little bit.
Spoken in true Donna fashion. I like it. I like it. What I would say to them is part of a really key component of leadership is your ability to hold space. Not to fill it with what you know is right, but to consider. Maybe the most powerful posture I can hold right now is just open, curious. And you can be strongly convicted in yourself. But I will say it's having that imposed is kind of the whole gig. That's why people are walking away anyways, is because, hey, there's no one here holding space for my multitudes of who I am and my questions. And so just be comfortable with the space and not having the solution, not having to impose the solution in that moment, right? This is the long game, I think. And just like,
this is the reality. This is the hard. So just plant yourself and listen and be present in somebody's life who is walking this. Is that what that person did that walked it with you?
Yeah, I felt very heard. And her heart was breaking with me for the reasons I was walking away. I mean, someone just said, I get that. Yeah, I would too.
So it's open, it's curious, it's compassionate.
Yes. There's a concept I've been thinking a lot about and talking about with people called the four survival needs. And humans think we need these as much as we need food and shelter and water. And it is the need to look good, feel good, be right, or be in control. And I think a lot of times really well-meaning leaders, they got to that leadership point because they have a gift. They're maybe very wise and they're, you know, experienced. But do not mistake that with these survival needs that get in your way from being an effective leader. And so I would say there's antidotes to each of these. Just first of all, let's recognize, oh, I'm just trying to be right now. What if I just was curious instead, trying to look good. This is one I grapple with all the time. I want to look good in the eyes of others. It's like, am I willing to look foolish sometimes to hold a powerful space or, you know, be in control? We can't control another person's faith journey. We can't, as much as we might wish we could. Yeah, I already know with children, that's probably a whole nother thing, but so it's like control the controllables and nothing more, right? And so I think that's just like, what is the most powerful space you can hold? And it's probably not you filling it. It's probably you holding it. holding the line of let there be a long silence. Ask
yeah, me. And I think that's, I so resonate with that because I think that's what's at stake as we talk about, like, because as peace, our goal is to reach people in Jesus. We want to reach one more in Christ. We want them to know the love of Jesus that's so significant to us. But I think sometimes if we want them to look like us, believe like us, act like us, vote like us, behave like us, sometimes we give up the opportunity to speak the gospel or say that I'm here for you or say that God loves you because we're so focused on the other things. And I think that's what just resonates with me in your story is that sometimes when people are struggling, we need to almost give up all of our preconceived notions for a moment, even though they're true. And even though I think I would still say that I'm hold to them and I believe in them. And I'm not going to back down from them, but I'm not going to make them the primary thing in the relationship. Because what I want for anybody that's struggling with if Jesus is real or if he really rose from the dead, what I ultimately want from them is not for them to think and behave and act like me, but I want them to know him and know that he loves them. And I love that friend said, I'm here and God is here, right? Like if we just focus on that in the midst of people struggling, that I'm here for you and Jesus is here for you, and just make that the truth that we embody and we speak in. I think, and you know, push back if that's not quite it, but that's what I'm hearing.
And we're going to get to the other side. And we're going to get there. We will.
Yeah.
The hope.
Because yeah, that's the hope. That's radical hope. We don't know that for sure, but to believe that and show up believing that is a powerful stance.
Yeah, but it's a little like Dell. You know, when Dell was passing, I've shared this before. We had a friend that had prostate cancer. Emma knew her. She went on a mission trip with her. Pancreatic cancer. And I remember her talking, and she was like, am I going to get through this? And we talked about the 23rd Psalm, and I said, Dell, you'll get through it. I think your through is going to look different. But the hope of the through, whether it's here or it's eternal life, it's keeping Jesus the main thing. And when we do that, then we do, you've said it well, take that posture. I want to have you back and talk about the four survival needs is what I want to do. And we will do that because I think that's a really great concept for our leaders. And I think we need that voice right now. But we'll do that later on, and you will be back. But yeah, I think, Emma, it's just amazing. Wait, not perfect. That box is pretty dinked up, but that's good. We don't want it looking like a brand new box, right? We want it to show it's been well loved.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, and we can celebrate that Jesus hasn't let you go, and you know, and your life might look different, but like that's what we want ultimately as a church, not for everybody to think and act and behave like us. And so I think, you know, for our leaders, like, we have to be okay with some of the messiness of that, and to let the main thing be the main thing. That's what I'm really grasping. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and your story bears that out so well, and I love that. So thank you.
I appreciate that. Yeah, it felt like it was like I was operating, swimming in an economy of transaction, is how I was taking it. I'm not saying that's the truth of what it was, mm-hmm. but this is how I'm holding it before. And now it feels like, okay, what does it look like to swim in the economy of transformation? You know, and
yeah.
If you feel yourself being transactional, you're probably not being transformational. And so those two seem like diametrically opposed.
Yeah.
I know I brought us to a place of closing, but I really have one more question because I've been thinking it all along. So, how did your parents do with this? Because your parents love Jesus deeply. They've been a super active part of the church. They've gone through their own journey, of course, but, how did they handle it? And I know I'm taking us right back into the deep, but we'll come out soon. I promise.
Absolutely. No, I love that you asked that because they're the most important, relationship of my faith, and or they, you know, were. And so I would say, gosh, I've never really thought about this, but they took it in stride. They never once were scared. They almost were like, tell me more. Like, they were those people that were like, oh, well, maybe I have something to learn. So that was like and that was just natural for them. I don't think that was a move. They have evolved a lot in their faith journey. I've seen it just from what the conversations we had as kids versus now. Yeah, they have. And I think that I almost think it's crazy to think they were kind of leaning in and going like, trusting like your kids to lead you a little bit, interestingly.
Yeah, it's an amazing moment. Going back to the dining room metaphor, it's an amazing moment when you move from the kids' table to the adults' table, right? Yeah. And you get to have a glass of wine and have a conversation that's very adult, and you realize your parent is listening and they are learning.
What a gift.
Yeah.
What a gift to be heard by your parents.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
Super way to good. Move up to the adult table.
Yeah.
Wow. I just want to thank you so much. I want to thank you for trusting us. I want to thank you for trusting our listeners. For being you and for being in this relationship, this friendship for so long. I'm just so thankful for that. So, yeah. Pastor, do you have anything in closing?
No, I think just a reminder,
you can't
like
say
as
no.
as we're once you ask that, no, I don't. I always have something to say. No, just that reminder as we walk from people. I think that's going to be my takeaway. Just remind them that I'm here for you, and God and Jesus is here for you. And just I think as we're walking through people in struggles, to be that person to reach out, to say that, to take the initiative if you're not seeing somebody in church that you used to, or you're not seeing somebody in the life of Christ, like just reach out and offer that. Not start with, hey, you need to come back to church, this is really important, but just start out with that I'm here for you and God is here for you. And
and to hold that space, to be able to be open and curious and compassionate, to look for those opportunities to just be with somebody. Yeah. Wow. Thanks again, Emma, and thank you. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for being a part of this community, and have a great day.